has been alluded to previously, the Office of Compliance has met with all key departments of the university. We reviewed corrective action plans for previous audit findings for the substance and viability of those plans. We're also implementing and monitoring the implementation of those corrective action plans. The Office of Compliance has also held quarterly reviews with all, again, members of key departments. In those reviews, we did look at, once again, the status of implementation of the corrective action plans. We've also reviewed any new mandates from the state as well as previous. We looked at the policies and procedures for each department which that correspond with the mandates for that department. We discussed with each department continuing education and maintaining a vigilance for new mandates and state regulations or federal regulations that will be passed. Regarding training and education, the Office of Compliance is working with the HR Department, Human Resources, for their training on the Identity Protection Program. We're ensuring that all persons who use Social Security numbers in the course of their duties and responsibilities are adequately trained in the protection of those numbers, and the only persons who actually need to use them have access to them. And lastly, under training and evaluation, the Office of Compliance is working cooperatively with a number of key departments. That would be the University Police, Enrollment Management, Legal and Labor Affairs, Judicial Affairs, the Counseling Center, and the Department of Human Resources. And that we're working with them for a new statute, which will take effect in actually October of 2014, the revisions of the annual security report. We want to make sure that all components of those revisions are in place. And Director Davis will be back at the next meeting and will present to the board a more comprehensive report as well as a review of the Office of Compliance and how it interacts with each department within the university. If there's no any questions, thank you.
Thank you. We'll have our athletics update. Mr. Schumacher.
Good morning, Chairman Young, Vice Chair Mr. Joyce, and President Watson. For the record, my name is Dan Schumacher, Director of Athletics. I'm going to be as brief as possible. The main point right now for a sign of the times is our academic profile is changing for the better, it goes along with our athletic achievements at the same time, which is the best synergy, and that's why they call it student athlete. The achievements we've are starting to attain athletically have not been seen here at Chicago State before. It has been a year of transition, but also it's been very transformational. I'm excited about the future. I'm excited to see the change in our academic profile in regards to incoming freshmen as well as our transfers. Our transfer numbers will go down with an increase more in four-year students. While raising that bar, we are also showing the capacity, because of our new affiliation in many different areas, to bring in student athletes with high academic profile, but with also high athletic ability that are going to perform and compete at a high level, especially at the Division I level. The move to the WAC is the key indicator for that. Our affiliation with the Western Athletic Conference gives our coaches an opportunity to sell academics and athletics like we've not done before. We have something to sell each student athlete when they're in their living room in front of their parents. And that continues with the new process of how we recruit student athletes. There is not a student athlete that's not allowed to sign a national letter of intent until they have met with myself and that they have a guardian or parent. And on campus, if all points possible, to be on campus, to be on their tour, on their official visit, so they hear the direct messaging of what the focus will be as a student athlete. Besides the move to the WAC, the quality hires that have taken place over the last 8 months is another sign of the times that Chicago State has not seen. The level of competency, the level of, and the degree of experience is through the roof right now. And of course, with that, the facility expansions such as the baseball field, new baseball stadium, the recent aesthetic changes to the JCC, as well as what's coming in the JDC, being more focused on a volleyball-only arena, is going to add to the recruiting base as well, and is something more to sell. Now, what's put the kind of cherry on top of the on the sundae has been a first-ever men's basketball championship this year. First time in school history, first time for postseason play. You start to culminate all the achievements and all the transformations for the year, it's adding up quickly. With the president's support, of course, all the vice presidents and the department chairs that have been extremely patient with me, as well as supportive of where the vision of Cougar Athletics wants to go, and I commend all of them for the collaboration on everything that we've been accomplishing this year. I also want to commend the coaches. Their commitment and buy-in to what we are going to sell, which is academic accomplishment as well as athletic, especially for new admission standards that have not been seen before. There was initial pushback a year ago this time, but you will see that every coach that's on staff, currently still on staff, has complete buy-in on what we're trying to do. The off-season, as we move over the off-season in the next 2 weeks, it'll be more, my direct attention will be against with sport expansion, with two soccer programs coming on. Over the next couple weeks, we look to hire two head coaches. We've already started interview process, which President Watson has been involved with in interviewing. These are key hires moving in to two new programs. Continued branding. We're going to continue to brand into print, radio, TV, and internet. I've said at each board meeting the tremendous response we've gotten from our new website and the redesign and the strategic push to push content information to that website to bring people that have never seen Chicago State in a new light with additional graphics, interactions, live videos. The list goes on and on. And we're going to continue to do that. As we move into this summer, we'll have an outcome of our RFP, and that was done on a branding situation for an Adidas, a Nike, a Under Armour. We are going to align ourselves, the Chicago State brand, with a major manufacturer like this. This has not been done either at Chicago State. So over the next months, we'll be going through that process, and everybody has a little different preference on what they want to wear in a Nike shirt or an Adidas, but this is going to be a financial decision because both brands, all three brands that I just mentioned, are nationally recognized. What that will do between the radio, print, internet, the RFP with a major brand like a Nike, what will that help us do? That'll help us create a new funding model, a new revenue model with corporate sponsorship. You walk in the JCC arena, it is a blank canvas. There is not one corporate sign. We are not aligned with any major businesses, alumni, all those types of things that own businesses we have not aligned with yet. This kind of branding and where we're trying to get to with a conference affiliation, a Nike, being on a TV contract, this should open up the doors to receive compensation for being aligned with the athletic department. That'll be a focus of the next following year, as well as a launch of a booster club, a formalized booster club that will be part of the development piece. Our NCAA compliance area has been enhanced recently with a new hire. Again, our success, one of them has done with the quality hires over the last 8 months, but Matt Jennings joined us. He's a former student athlete from the University of Illinois, but just graduated, will be graduating here from DePaul in the next couple weeks in law school. He has come to us. He's made tremendous strides in a short period of time. He's been employed by DePaul's compliance office for the last year, so we're lucky to have him on staff at this time. The baseball stadium, it's almost finished, as President Watson alluded to, and I know facilities will mention some of the things on the construction. It is a centerpiece for our baseball program. It's a centerpiece alongside the JCC arena. It is a game changer. This project has put us with, again, with a conference realignment into a new conference, which is the number four ranked toughest conference in college baseball in the country. Has opened doors for us between the stadium and moving into the Western Athletic Conference that we signed 10 players last week to national letters of intent, including the number one rated baseball player out of the state of Oregon. Now, when you say Oregon, you say, why? Why? The WAC name is recognizable on the West Coast. So the Colorados, the Arizonas, the Californias, the Washingtons, the Oregons, those are, the WAC name is so recognizable that this gives an opportunity for, we've signed four California kids as well, for these people to come to this area because of a major media market in a major city with the opportunity to still fly back home into their areas and still play in front of family and friends. So it's an interesting dynamic that's allowed us into conversations that we've never had before. The next facility upgrade that's necessary, the necessary is a game changer like the baseball stadium, is that if we were to replace the track is borderline, could, you know, a safety officer would need to take a look at it from a training standpoint for our athletes. They have a lot of leg injuries right now, usage injuries, because the surface is no longer able to compete on. It's just a practice facility. Now, with starting two soccer programs, we're going to need a place to play. Temporary, we're going to use the baseball stadium because of the artificial surface and the lights and stuff. But eventually, the track facility needs to be redone into a track and soccer facility. If we were to replace the track, we would be the only Division I school in Chicago out of the five Division I's that would have an on-campus track facility, which is a game changer for us. Lastly, the fall will bring new excitement and promise for Cougar Athletics. We have finished strong academically. In fact, I was just text message. I made our academic advisor, academic services person, calculate the GPA. All of our athletes combined finished with a cumulative 3.1 GPA at the end of this semester. I said it at the opening press conference, you can win with smart kids, and we're going to set out to prove that. Our future is bright, and it's about a collective achievement. I mentioned all the different department heads, the president. The Board of Trustees plays a key role in this, and I implore that you continue to support athletics and look for this as a vehicle for which to brand the institution. So, again, thank you for your support, President Watson, for his leadership in all these achievements, and I look forward to seeing you show you a detailed, on one of these big screen, an academic profile comparison of last year's incoming compared to this year's in the levels of athletic achievement that they're coming in from what high schools and clubs to a new level. So thank you. I'm open for any questions.
Can you talk a little bit about what the basketball schedule is going to look like in the future, some of the things that you're adding?
Well, I know it
sounds like
it
a crazy
easier.
Question, but it's a good one. There's some things happening.
We are, you know, we're just working through the TV schedule. I was in Phoenix the last 3 days, just returned yesterday with WAC athletic director meetings. So I've been appointed chair of the committee for the conference to negotiate with ESPN for our basketball contract. So I'm excited about that. But as far as our schedule goes and how it's, I'm hoping it gets a little easier. If you don't know, we were the number two highest rated basketball schedule, RPI, toughest schedule in the country last year, and Coach Dildy did an outstanding job. But there's a reason why. So to educate all of you, the reason why we're the tough is because we had guarantee games. We are the lowest funded school in the WAC by a couple million dollars. It was relying upon Coach Dildy and his program to get guarantees, to bring in over $600,000 worth of guarantee money that helps pay for all the other sports. Coach Dildy didn't get direct benefit from those guarantees other than getting his butt kicked a bunch of times, okay? And which wasn't fun. I'd like to see us back down on the game guarantees with more institutional support or these new revenue models of corporate sponsorship and finding other ways to bring in private dollars to offset those guarantees so we can lessen our schedule that will allow us a better chance to compete. You know, to walk down to Texas or Oregon, you know, Illinois, that's a tough place to go play. You know, you're going to get, you know, $80,000, $90,000 to go play, but when you get beat by 20, 25 points on TV, it's a tough one. And it puts Coach Dildy behind the eight ball from a recruiting standpoint. So we need to lessen the schedule. but I know we have Notre Dame on the schedule again this year. We're in negotiations right now with the University of Michigan, with my relationship with the AD there. We're looking for a 2-for-1 instead of a guarantee where we're going to go there twice, but Michigan will come here once. Now, Michigan was just in the national championship game, so it can't get any bigger than that, all right? So what another combination is, if we were to get 2-for-1s, that allows us every other year to bring a big name, a really big name, to the JCC, which hopefully fills the arena to produce the ticket revenue that offsets a guarantee as well. So there's all kinds of different combinations that we're trying to figure out that's going to best suit our basketball schedule.
Thank you, Dave.
I know you asked me the time, and I built you a clock there, it needed to be said.
No, I've gotten to know you. I'm familiar with that.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate that. Any other questions?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Go Cougars.
Have our information technology report.
Good morning, Board of Trustees, President Watson, Mr. Cage. A quick update from Information Technology Division. President Watson alluded to the major upgrades we are doing at the university. To give you some background, the infrastructure that we have in place today was deployed in mid-1990s, and we have been using that infrastructure all this time, which causes all these issues with network connectivity and frustration from our end user community, including students. In December, we brought a resolution to the board, which was approved. There were two items on the resolution. The first one was to upgrade all the switchgear in the university, bringing it to the latest, Dr. Watson mentioned, to the latest technology. The second resolution was to increase our internet connections by more than 10 times, and the board approved that resolution. Dr. Watson signed the contracts, POs have been issued, and we are now working on implementing it. The goal is to have it completed by June 30, 2013. Those are major renovations in terms of technology infrastructure for the university. There is a resolution on the agenda today, and the goal of this item is to improve the productivity of our end users. That there are a couple of items or software acquisitions being proposed. The first one is a document management system, and the second one is the travel and expense. Our document management system will allow us to scan any of the incoming documents at the university and store it digitally on our storage servers. To give you an example, any paper that comes into the university, if deemed necessary, has to be stored somewhere. It includes application forms, any contact with students, and so on. Once the document management system is implemented, this application form, along with transcripts, certifications, student achievements, records, will be scanned and stored online. This will be accessible to all our staff members through workflow. It will be transmitted across different departments electronically. So it saves time in carrying this paperwork around. It obviously removes any issues with lost paperwork because everything is online now. Alerts are generated, emails are sent if something is in my queue for approval. And so that's the first software acquisition. The second software that we are proposing is travel and expense management. At the university currently, all the travel-related paperwork is done manually in paper form. Once this travel and expense is purchased and implemented, it will allow us to do all the travel-related paperwork for faculty and staff online. It speeds things up. It's accurate. There is no issue of any lost paperwork. So these are items on the agenda for today's board meeting. Any questions?
Hearing no questions, is there a motion to approve Elution and Oracle Software License and Support Agreement?
So moved. Is that the one you alluded to? I'm sorry, because it didn't seem like it matched what he was talking about.
That's correct. Elution is the company that will provide the software.
Then I have a question. Was this anticipated, this increase of $353,000 from the, is that, was that from an original contract?
The original contract with Elution was roughly in the neighborhood of $900,000. These are new projects that IT has initiated to improve the productivity of our end users. And that's why we have to buy the software and the consulting service to actually have it implemented and functioning.
So this is expansion of what you had anticipated. It's not a really increase, an expansion of your scope from what you originally contracted for.
That's correct, absolutely.
Okay. I did hear a motion. Was there a second?
No second.
Who did the first? Okay. Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Leak?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Sanchez?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. That is the end of the Finance and Audit Committee report.
Let's do it.
That me?
So we're ready for the report from the chairman of the Facilities Committee.
Well, first I would ask if there are any comments or corrections to the minutes from the last Facilities Committee board meeting. If there aren't any, may I have a motion to approve the minutes of the March 8th, 2013.
So moved.
I have a second. Does someone want to second that motion? Thank you.
Trustee Sanchez.
Sanchez, thank you.
Hearing.
Okay.
We call the roll.
Okay. Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Leak? Trustee Leak?
Minutes.
Yeah, you have to say yes.
Yes.
Okay. Trustee Smith?
Present.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Sanchez?
Yes.
Thank you. I see we have Ms. Horton and Chief Watson here with us today,
yes.
So I will turn it over to you.
Good morning. In the interest of time, and for the record, my name is Monique Horton. I will be giving only the highlights from our report unless there are any questions. The first highlight is our new recycling program. We have started on campus in certain buildings. We will be expanding that program to look at the success of the first program. But right now we are recycling cardboard and paper, and we are very excited about getting the entire community on campus aware and also trained to know what to recycle. The second thing that everybody stole the thunder on was the baseball field. So since we already kind of have the update on the baseball field, I will move on to the pharmacy project that we have. We are going to have a meeting next week with the architect. We have received the green light to proceed with the continuing of the base of the pharmacy on the third floor. So then there's one last highlight I would like to mention, which is our campus valve replacement. We have purchased all of the valves, and our own people will be installing them. We have a savings that we have from our energy, and so we are going to be doing that project in June, as we have stated in the previous reports. There are any questions on the report? There's just one other thing. Metra, during the CTA construction, we are going to have a full service stop here on campus during the CTA construction. So that's just a point of information. Any questions about the report? Okay, if there are none, we do have a resolution on the agenda. With our wellness center moved into a modular unit, it would actually allow for adequate square footage that we need for the wellness center immediately. So this resolution is for a modular unit. It is over 250, so we are bringing that to the board. It'll also accommodate for IT's immediate relocation, which is needed due to the infrastructure strengthening that was discussed earlier. And it would also allow for the upcoming construction of the new wellness center in Douglas Hall. Are there any questions?
Are there any questions regarding this resolution? If not, can I get a motion to approve the Wellness Center Modular Unit Resolution?
So moved.
A second? Is there something wrong with the way I'm asking for a second?
Second.
Thank you.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Leek?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Sanchez?
Thank you.
And I believe that's the end of the Facilities Committee meeting. Sarah, I'll stop talking.
He's causing a problem. I'm learning. I'm just learning.
Okay, we're ready for the Legislative Committee meeting. As we approved the minutes for this meeting, Trustee Smith brought it to my attention that he and Trustee Leek were voting on minutes at meetings they didn't appear at. So perhaps as we approve these minutes, we'll just have the trustees vote who were actually at the meeting.
It does present somewhat of a conundrum in that without their voting on it, then we don't have a quorum in which to actually approve them. So it is a kind of a legal conundrum that was, thank you for catching that, but I was thinking of that through the meeting and didn't have a solution immediately for that.
Since we know that, I'll vote, but that was my point, we were not present, so governance says you really should not vote.
Yes.
If you're not present. But keep the quorum, we'll do it.
Are there any comments or corrections to the meeting, to the minutes?
There weren't any, no.
Do I have a motion to approve?
Okay, Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
We didn't get the motion.
Oh.
I asked, do I have a motion? Did somebody make a motion to approve?
Yes.
I'll second the motion.
How can we get to quick second?
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Leek? Trustee Smith?
Yes.
And Trustee Sanchez?
We'll have our governmental affairs update.
Good afternoon, Board of Trustees. My name is Farah Muscadin, Director of Intergovernmental Affairs. And I just want to touch upon four big topics before I present our resolution. And the first big topic is the budget. Currently in Springfield, we are negotiating the budget in both chambers. They have two completely different approaches in terms of how they are going to calculate what our specific budget is going to be. In the House, I know that we are looking at somewhere between a 2 to 3% reduction, and in the Senate, it's a little bit more. This process is fluid, but we are very engaged in it. We are working to make sure that any cuts that come to CSU are fair across the board. There has been a trend over the last few fiscal years that CSU has been cut a little bit more than others. We're hoping to stop that trend this year. And we are working to get the pharmacy grant reinstated. It was completely wiped out in the governor's proposed budget. I have had very, very, very favorable conversations in both chambers that the pharmacy grant will be reinstated. That is $307,000. So as we move forward, it's going to be tight. Part of the issue that you've heard from Finance and Administration with us getting our portion of our appropriations is because of the fiscal climate of the state. Money's tight. And so everybody is getting cut, but the goal is fairness and the least amount of cut possible. So we are working very diligently on that. The next issue is pensions. We have had this past week, several negotiation sessions with the Speaker of the House regarding whether or not universities, community colleges, and school districts will take on what's called the cost shift. And what that is that currently the state pays 12% of the employer portion into the pension system. The speaker believes that the universities, the community colleges, and the school districts should take on that portion. So what we have done is negotiated a phase-in of 0.5% a year until we take on the full shift. Now, what that means financially for the university is approximately $300,000 in the first year, and then it'll go up 0.5% each year until we take on the full 12%. I won't bore you with the numbers in terms of the 12% pension number is projected to decrease over time as they're less tier one pension participants, which is the most expensive pension, and tier two, which has a modified pension, increases. So right now the number is at approximately 11%. So in terms of the cost shift, it won't be as much as we anticipate with the pension reforms moving forward, but what's important for the board to know is that it is still a cost on the university. It is something that will be coming out of the university's appropriations going forward and the potential liability of it. So we're working on that. I can't really tell you where we're going with pension reform because we have two different approaches in each chamber. Each chamber has passed their own bills, and I can't really tell you who's going to call which bill and when. But in terms of the cost shift, it is moving forward, and it is realistic that we will be taking that on in the near future. The next issue is, and I've reported this on the past, is the issue of conceal and carry. As you know, there's a deadline with the legislature of June 9th to pass some sort of bill. Two bills have failed in the House, one with permissive language, one which is the NRA-backed legislation. That failed short 6-7 votes. The Senate yesterday had a hearing on their version. The NRA opposed that version. It may come up to vote today. I'm not quite sure. But then again, there isn't really a consensus in terms of what actually will happen. What's key for you to know is that in the legislation, we are working hard to ensure that there is an exemption for colleges and universities. And it has been in both versions. And we watch that very closely. The next thing is that we hear constant chatter about a potential capital bill. So what we're doing is working on our list of requests. We're requesting funds for the daycare center. We're requesting funds for Robinson Center, which is approximately $50 million. And so we're working to make sure that our members and our supporters have that list so that when the talks get real, they'll know what we want and what we need. So we're in the process of that. Last thing that you should be aware of is that we put forward legislation to allow the board to enact a policy to allow for the sale of alcohol on campus at non-student related events. The bill has passed the House and the Senate. It is on its way to the governor. So I'll be working with the general counsel and our board counsel to develop this policy that we hope to bring to you in September. And then now, if there are any other questions, I'll go to our federal lobbyist resolution. That's okay.
I just have a question. I hate to do this, but I understand that the issue of moving pension reform and the shift. So how does a university then gain the funds to support that?
Well, see, that's an excellent question. And so we meet, all the liaisons for all the public universities, we meet every week. And so what we decided to do this week was do a roll call, because what I found was happening is that the members weren't linking the cost shift to our appropriation. And so, for example, universities only have two sources of revenue, tuition and appropriations. And so what they were doing was linking us with the school districts who have property tax authority, which we don't. So we had to literally connect the dots for members. And we spent all week doing that. And we're hoping that they will take that into consideration, because basically the cost shift funds is really coming out of the appropriations the state gave us. It's really the same pot. But you know, the leader has spoken, and he wants us to take on this shift, and we're trying to negotiate taking on the shift in a phase-in, but also getting some of our asks. And so we have asked for a few things that will help with the management of, you know, procurement relief. We've asked for funding relief, but it's kind of unrealistic. And we have some other asks on the table that'll just hopefully help in terms of the operations of public universities. So it's just a reality that we have to face. Any other questions? Okay, so in regards to our federal lobbyist, this is a key service that we need. We have been working pretty diligently in establishing relationships with our federal agencies. And why that is important is because it brings funding to the university by way of grants and other programs. And so our federal lobbyist is key in helping us make the contacts and establish those relationships. So right now we're working with the Department of Energy for their particular programs and potential funding sources. and we're working with the Department on Agriculture to help expand our aquaponics program. And then also working with our congressional delegation and making those appropriate contacts with them. Our top priority right now on a federal level is the improvements of the Metro Station in 95th and Cottage. And this is where our federal lobbyist is key with that, because we've had several meetings with Secretary LaHood. We have a potential funding source that we need to push Metro to apply for. Metro has allocated $800,000 so far for the design and planning. We are doing our due diligence with helping identify other sources to help with that design and planning. So this is an important service that we need. After going through the RFP process, we identified a vendor. The contract is set up as a 5-year contract, initial 1 year, with two options for 2-month extensions. So it gives us a 1-year lead time to see how it works, see how the relationship is going. And then if we choose to go our separate ways, we can after a year. If we want to move forward, then we can extend it for 2 years, and then again for 2 years. So the total aggregate of the contract is $684,000, and the reason, because it's over $250,000, is why we have to bring it before the board. So I urge your strong support of this resolution.
Do we have a motion to approve? Are there any questions on the resolution? Do we have a motion to approve the resolution for funding for the federal lobbyists?
So moved.
Second.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Leak?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Sanchez?
Yes.
At this point, we'll have a civil service merit board update. Currently, I'm the member on the civil service merit board. We had a meeting scheduled for this Wednesday. We could not have a formal meeting for lack of a quorum, which is due in part to so many new board members at all of the state universities. I guess there's been a great many board terms that expired. Some new members were appointed, some were not. But anyway, the merit board did not have a quorum, and so we conducted the business that could be conducted that did not require a vote. One of the main functions of the merit board are to hear employment issues. As a summary, over the last year, there have been 45 discharges throughout the state at the state university. Of those 45 people have been discharged, these are all civil service now, 16 requested merit board hearings. Of those 16 hearings, there are 6 that are still pending. 3 were supposed to take place Wednesday, and 3 were supposed to take place at our August meeting. So there's gonna be an attempt to have a special meeting, because 6 hearings at one meeting would be a little too much. What happened in our January meeting of interest or note is the resolution regarding classification, human resource classification of job positions that was debated throughout the state with the merit board director wanting to assume a lot of the duties from the human resource departments throughout the states. And in that conflict, the human resource departments made the board members see the light. And so that attempt was withdrawn, at least momentarily.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. You mentioned the cases before the merit board. Were any of them from Chicago State?
None of them were from Chicago State. I'm glad you brought that up. It's a source of pride. Of the 45, of the 16 cases before the board, none of them from Chicago State in the past year. And that's the end of my report. We will not have a foundation report because the foundation board member is not here, or not board member, but that's board member, okay. We'll have our trustee report from trustee Sanchez. Is there a question? Trustee Sanchez?
I'm just going to touch briefly on a few things that were already reported in the Academic and Student Affairs report. Student Government Association held Spring Fling April 22nd through the 27th. They did a co-activity with the Disabilities Office on campus. The Latino Resource Center held their annual Cinco de Mayo celebration on Friday, May 3rd, in make strides in making efforts to introduce our surrounding communities to our CSU campus, as well as the end of the year reception on May 14. The students that were awarded and identified at this reception were students with a 3.7 GPA and above, graduating seniors, students from the Collegiate Leadership Development Program, and students in the Mentor Mentee Program. That should conclude my report.
Questions or comments regarding the report? I don't think there's a need to recess into another executive session today. Nothing that has come up needs to be talked about in executive session. To continue with the reorganization of the board, I'd like to announce the committee chairmanships. Trustee Joyce will remain chairman of Academic Affairs. Trustee Curtin will become the new chairman of Finance and Audit. Trustee Smith will become the chairman of Facilities, and Trustee Leak will be the chairman of Legislative and Human Resources. Also, Trustee Leak will also become our representative on the Civil Service Board, and Trustee Smith will be our member on the Foundation Board.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think we're ready to open up for public comment. I would just like to remind anyone who wishes to make a public comment that we don't entertain comments on personnel matters, on the collective bargaining process, or on grievances of individual students or employees. Having said that, we are now open for public comment.
For the record, Philip Beverly, political science. I'd like to welcome the new trustees to your tasks here. I'd like to thank the former trustees for their service, and thank the continuing trustees and counselor for your continuing service as well. For the new trustees, particularly, as a senior faculty member, I provide the faculty narrative for the events at the university. You'll hear the various narratives, administration, alumni, students, all of them, and none of them are right. They're just perspectives. They're just the way, the lens that we look at the university through. They aren't about right and wrong. Rather, they're about that perspective. And as the body that has the responsibility for the direction and success of the university, I only want to give you our one sort of faculty perspective to inform your decision making. One of the things that we've continued to be concerned about, I think, as faculty, is the absence of a culture of accountability. And without that culture embedded in the fabric of the institution, we can't really have any standards of excellence. We can't really have expectations of superior performance, or even expectations of compliance. A consequence of not having a culture of accountability could be not knowing who's responsible for something. I'll give you a specific example. I don't know who's responsible for the enforcement of the provisions of 110 ILCS 660, which is commonly referred to as the CSU law. We know that a student trustee, for example, according to the statute, shall be chosen by a campus-wide student election. And I'll get to that in a second. We also know that there's certain eligibility requirements for the student trustee, and that if these requirements aren't met, then, quote, his or her membership on the board shall be deemed to have terminated by operation of law. And I can cite you out of section 2 of that statute what that is. The question that I have is, who's responsible for ensuring the requirements are met, and is the enforcement of that law transparent? Without a culture of accountability, the university might find itself out of compliance with the state statute and thus subject to sanctions. With the results of the student government elections recently held invalidated, after June 30th of this year, there will be no student trustee, and the students will not have their voice heard, possibly until after the September board meeting. And who would be held accountable for denying students their voice on this board? I'm concerned about the very sort of haphazard way the governor has treated this institution's governance since he's been governor. Many faculty and staff have asked whether the trustee appointments have been approved by the Executive Appointments Committee and sent to the Senate for approval. If consent is not actually required, as is stated in 110 ILCS 660 section 5-15, then there seems to be some confusion in the law, and that has some potential for negative impact, and I'll share that with you. If in fact the board was not properly constituted, the impact on faculty could be around our tenure recommendations that you approved earlier, the fee increases, for example, College of Pharmacy, and university contracts that you've approved. If a student of pharmacy who would be subjected to the increase challenges the legitimacy of the board by saying that the Senate did not, in fact, approve the appointments, thus you didn't have a quorum, then all the actions taken by this board are invalid. That argument could be made. I think the university, under its wise general counsel, might be able to win the battle in court, but we're still going to suffer the negative implications of what that looks like in public. It can become a perception issue. And we really don't need the perception issue. Finally, faculty are very concerned about our long-serving provost leaving the university, and concerned mostly about no announcement having been made about her departure, her retirement. And no announcement has been made about an interim appointment, no launch of a search process.
Excuse me, Dr. Beverly, but that's a personnel matter, which is not properly entertained in public comments.
And Mr. Chairman, with respect, I bring this up as a board regulation question and observation, not expecting response, if that makes sense.
Well, whether it's a board regulation, it's still a personnel matter. And I know you don't want a response, but people have a right not to have their personnel issues addressed in public forum.
Okay, can you give me some guidance on what you're asking?
No, this has been more dialogue than we should have. I'm just reminding you that personnel matters are not properly addressed at public comment.
So you don't want the public to make comment about personnel matters? Okay. Then it's my hope that the board will continue in its service to the institution, an institution that in less than four years from now, will be celebrating its 150th anniversary. Boards always seem to have difficult decisions, and I believe that this board is no different. Once again, thank you for your service and the work that you do for the university, and know that however I and the members of the Senate might be of service, you need only ask.
Thank
you. Good afternoon. My name is Fatima Muhammad. I'm an assistant professor in the Communications, Media Arts, and Theater program here at Chicago State. And I just wanted to congratulate the board for being a part of this university, and I'm still excited about yesterday's commencement. It was really impressive. Dr. Mason was here, and Dr. Arnold gave a great introduction to him, And so I was really excited. I was really, my heart was overflowing and my tears to see the CMAT program graduate 10 students and just see the CMAT students operating the cameras and doing some of everything. And I was impressed with our students and all the graduates, even those, one of the, just last week in this room, one of the graduates was Dion Walker. She brought Val Warner to campus, to this room last Thursday. So I was just really impressed, and I wanted to let the record reflect that great things are happening at Chicago State. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Hi. My name is Marilyn Yosa, and I am a student that's matriculated, grad student in special education here. And I have, on August, I understand that certain issues are not what the rules are there. But I'm going to try to limit it to this one issue that I put a request in for my student records official request online, as the University Council told me that's how it's done, on August 13th, 2012. And under federal FERPA law, a student is allowed to access their records within 45 days. I was told on September 7th by University Council that she had to leave the campus, and I would be receiving those records by UPS. But that turned out to be a hoax, and here it is. Well, in January, it was almost 180 days, so I had to file the official FERPA complaint for the violation of that federal law. Still don't have my records, and I understand why there's a story that there, but I don't know. There's not going to be a dialogue. I just wanted to, even though when I had asked at Monique Davis's office, who's a legislator for a higher education committee, and she's usually in Springfield, and said, why have they done this? Why have they treated you so badly? So, thank you.
For the record, my name is Gerald Shin. I'm a graduate student in history, Chicago State University. Dr. Beverly mentioned accountability and perception. Now, I know one of the reports I was given earlier talked about drop in revenues because of drop in enrollment, drop in grants because of drop in enrollment. When I started here, there were 7,200 students. Now there's 5,800, according to the IBHE audit, when I looked it up for 2012. Now the administration says that this is because of the enrollment scandal of early 2011, and because so many students had to be let go at the end of that spring semester, that is what has caused the rather sharp decline in enrollment since I got here. But if you look at that same Illinois Board of Higher Education audit, you'll see that enrollment at the end of fiscal year 2011 was 6,800. At the end of 2012, it was 5,800. If the administration's narrative was correct, the sharp drop would have taken place at the end of fiscal year 2011, not 2012. Now, the administration lack of accountability likes to say that, like everything else, it's Elnora Daniels' fault. I don't see how, especially since the vice president of enrollment management said that the vast majority of our students decided at the last minute to go here. The last year that Elnora Daniels would have been responsible for enrollment in a school would have been fall 2008. But yet we get a sharp drop in enrollment in 2012. And a large number of students who are dismissed because they had GPAs as low as 0.0 and 2011, but somehow it's Honora Daniels' fault, 2008. Makes no sense. We have an enrollment problem. We have a lot of problems in this school. You know, the enrollment scandal that we had to repay $312,000 in financial aid scandal, personnel scandals that caused problems with previous members of the Board of Trustees. Now, the timeline for the narrative given by the administration on why enrollment is so sharply down is obviously false, okay? Which takes me to perception. Why is enrollment down? Perception of the school, the multiple ongoing scandals that nobody at the top will take responsibility for. Thank you.
Any other comments?
Good afternoon. My name is Dr. Latrice Eggleston. I'm the Associate Director for the Office of Institutional Effectiveness and Research. And I just want to make a comment on Chicago State's enrollment being down. We also have to recognize that enrollment across the state of Illinois is down. So it's just not affecting Chicago State in terms of our enrollment. It's affecting campuses across the country and within the state of Illinois. And I want to also indicate that there were circumstances that the numbers in between 2010, 2011 were high because we had students on the roll who should not have been on the roll. And I just wanted to make that comment to keep everyone informed that there should be context around using numbers.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, my name is Gideon Charles, Dr. Smith. Welcome. The new board members, Chairman, Mr. Young, congrats. The board, faculty, staff, everyone who's here. I'm glad that everyone came out here. I have been associated and involved with Chicago State since 1986. Undergrad, grad, I did my PhD at UIC. And it's disheartening to see what's taking place at Chicago State presently. I'm a very proud West Indian. And I came to Chicago State because I saw the potential it had. As a matter of fact, I was a director of intergovernmental affairs for the Prime Minister of Trinidad and Tobago, Mr. Patrick Manning. And I chose to come to Chicago State because many of my friends always had this negative feedback towards Chicago State. I came here when Dr. Ayers was the president. Mm. I've seen Dr. Ayers, Dr. Cross, Dr. Daniels, Dr. Watson, Dr. Poe briefly. And I certainly would like to encourage many of my friends and colleagues, both from England and in the Caribbean, to come to Chicago State. But as board members, I think we have to put the university ahead of everything else. And the stigma that's attached to Chicago State University needs to be a focus on that, because it be heading nowhere fast. Everyone that I've spoken to always have something negative to say as a lecturer here. And it's very, very disheartening. And I believe we have a right as minorities here, in probably the largest minority institution in the state of Illinois, to try to do something that will affect the lives of each and every one. I grew up in a very humble beginning in Trinidad, and I know what it is to have a quality education. I tell people, poor in the United States is completely different to poverty in Trinidad, in a third world country. And when I see what's taking place here, where people are coming into certain positions, I don't know if this is a personal matter, but they're in positions of authority, and they should not be there. Clearly, they should not be there. But simply because of nepotism, cronyism, and favoritism, this is what's taking place at Chicago State. So we need to put that aside and ensure that we do what's best for the greater of Chicago State University. We have some wonderful people here, the athletic director, you know, Dr. Beverly. So we have some wonderful people here at the institution. But I truly want the best, honestly want the best for this institution. I could have gone to many other universities, Howard University, Mr. Leake. I could have gone to many other institutions because of my ability, my knowledge, you know, where I got scholarships to various, you know, institutions throughout the United States. But I chose Chicago State because it's a black university. My family lived on the south side, so they told me to come here to Chicago State. But again, before I end here, I must say that having the opportunity to work in government, in such working with the Prime Minister of Trinidad and Tobago, and I'm seeing what's taking place here on the south side of Chicago at this great institution, which was founded in 1867. I believe we have the potential to go far, but when it is we have the people who are basically bringing people because of nepotism and cronyism and certainly do not have the best interests of the university, I think that in itself is very, very disloyal to those who really want to come here and make a major contribution to the progress, to the development, and for the advancement of Chicago State University. And I ask the board members to please, please take your time and make a decision, whatever decision is, to do what's best for this institution, for it to advance and promote it in the way that it should be promoted, so that we can bring people from not only the Chicagoland area, but from all over the world to come to Chicago State, and we can show them the potential that it has here.
Any other comments? Hearing none, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
No second.
7 seconds.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Leake?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Sanchez? Yes. Trustee Sanchez?
Yes.
Plus, he can't go. He just told me he can't go 60 feet.
No more. We're no more. No more.